Off the Ball, GAA.
This year I just had a lot of motivation to right the wrongs of last year, because I didn't have a good year last year personally, so that was a big thing for me.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
Welcome along to Tuesday night's football show. We're still very much picking over some of the storylines from weekend one of the Premier League season. And one of the more interesting themes from the early kickoff on Saturday between Aston Villa and Newcastle was a shared sense of discontent between both supporters. So come kickoff, Jacob Ramsey was on the verge of moving from Aston Villa to Newcastle, and a move that has since been confirmed. Ramsey spent 18 years at Aston Villa. He came through the academy there, which meant that the player could be sold for pure profit in the profit and sustainability rules that obviously every Premier League club has to comply with. Aston Villa have been in a spot of bother with that, or close to the line, in recent seasons, so really important that they managed to make that sale happen. A similar situation happened last summer when Newcastle United were forced to sell their academy product, Elliot Anderson, to Nottingham Forest. So their fans know the feeling, and we had the situation where both fans were chanting against the Premier League throughout the match on Saturday. We will be joined a little bit later this hour by Kieran McGuire of The Price of Football for a wider chat about this. But just to dig down into the Aston Villa specifics of it, Dan Bardell of the 1874 podcast is with us on the line. Dan, how are you doing?
Except for PSR, I'm pretty good. How are you?
All good. So talk to us about the scene at Villa Park on Saturday. I know you were there, and we often see football fans very much being on opposite sides of the page when it comes to matters regarding anything, really. But this was quite unusual, where Villa fans and Newcastle fans seem to be in strong agreement about a fairly important subject.
Yeah, look, it was probably the most interesting moment in what wasn't a very interesting game. I think that those that tuned in at Saturday lunchtime were probably expecting a really good game. It never quite materialised, but I think it's two sets of fans that are just completely fed up, and Villa Park was pretty flat, I've got to say. But I understand why it's flat, because you've gone into the start of the season where usually you're feeling quite buoyant, but on the eve of it, you've pretty much found out that one of your homegrown players is going to go, and that money isn't going to get reinvested. So I was okay with him going, thinking that that money would be reinvested. But it sounds like it's already been spent in the form of Evan Gasson coming in a few weeks prior. So it's just, for me, it's everything football shouldn't be. You know, the dream is always watching academy players come through and make it into your first team, and they're almost living out your dream that you've all wanted to do, but you've never been good enough to do. Now, anytime you get a promising homegrown player come through, all the talk's about pure profit and PSR, and that just isn't the way that football should be.
Yeah, they are the ultimate cash cow now in modern football. It's an unintended consequence, I would venture, of what football has decided to do with itself. The Newcastle United fans, I'm not sure were you chatting to them, but their view on things, I presume, just goes straight back to Elliot Anderson last summer.
Yeah, 12 months ago, pretty much exactly the same thing happened to them. They've had a few porous transfer windows, haven't they, Newcastle, where they've not done much business of any note. But the big one that stands out for them is Elliot Anderson, who they were hoping was going to live their dream, and he did play for the club. Jacob Ramsey's probably further along in his career than Elliot Anderson was. But they've watched probably someone who's going to be playing for England in the World Cup go to Nottingham Forest again, because they're forced into a situation where, to comply, the best and easiest thing for them to do is to sell someone who's come through the academy.
What were the chance?
I don't know whether I'd be able to repeat them. I mean, I tread the line of losing myself work every single week when I talk about the Premier League. But let's just say it wasn't too flattering towards the Premier League and the way they operate. And I think these rules have got to change, because it stops teams like Villa and Newcastle. And I'm not saying either of those clubs hasn't spent money, because they have. But when Chelsea got rich owners, when Manchester City got rich owners, they came in and they could spend what they wanted, and that enabled them to get to the level that they're at today, to be these superpowers, to be those super clubs, because previously they've been able to spend what they want, and it's easier for them to kind of bypass the restrictions because of the global giants that they are. Villa and Newcastle almost get to where they want to be, and to stay there, you have to spend money. but they're not allowed to spend the money because they're breaking rules that have been made to almost hurt them and stop them getting towards and challenging that traditional Big Six. So it's really, really tough at the moment. Like I say, Villa Park was pretty flat on Saturday for an opening game of the season, and it's never right. That's not the way it should be.
The reaction from inside the dressing room has also been quite telling, and from players specifically. Tyrone Mings, for example, put up a post that was, you know, quote tweeting, or on his Instagram story rather, that thank you, JJ. And he said, I don't want to hear any bad words or anything negative on his name. You don't know the half. Then you had John McGinn on Instagram as well, describing it as a perfect example of how an academy player should handle the transition to the first team. Always humble, respectful and willing to learn. It's been a privilege to share the dressing room with you and enjoy some special moments together on the pitch. A sad day losing a top player and person and one of our own, but it seems to be the way football is set up these days. All the best, JJ. Demoralising not only for the fans, but also for the players, it seems.
Yeah, and I'm glad the players came out and spoke and almost preempted that maybe Jacob Ramsey is a homegrown player leaving his local club, the club he supported all of his life. Maybe that homegrown players always get treated differently, don't they? They're held to a higher standard. And I think maybe there was a chance that some Villa fans might get on his back and give him abuse for leaving the club. But Ramsey's almost got no choice but to leave, because he knows by him leaving, he's stopping the club from either getting a fine, ban from Europe, squad restrictions, whatever, transfer ban. Him making that move stops those things happening to Villa. Now, I was okay with him going because I thought it was a good move for the player and I thought it was a good fee for Villa. But I also thought that money was going to be reinvested. Once you see that Ramsey's gone, you know, Asensio hasn't come back yet, Rashford's left the squad from last season as well, Leon Bailey's going to Roma, suddenly four of your attacking players are gone, and Unai Emery must have turned to his bench on Saturday and thought, I'm not really sure what I can do here that's going to change things or improve things. So from a fan perspective, the club is a lot weaker at the moment than it was at the end of last season, where we went on a brilliant run and probably should have secured Champions League football. So unless we can do some clever loans, I think it might be a harder season than some of us anticipated. I thought we were well set for challenging for the top five. But you look, if the other clubs are improving, if you're not improving, you're standing still, aren't you? And if you're standing still, you're going backwards. So Villa at the moment are backwards from where they were at last season.
That obviously delivers a whole pile of concern when it comes to this season coming up. Does it give you any concern with regards to the future of Unai Emery, or is that far too dramatic a case to make? If his frustrations fester over the next couple of seasons as a result of these rules, is it potentially a departure on the sideline as much as departures on the pitch?
Look, he is the most important person at Aston Villa Football Club. As long as he is there, I would always back us to be in and around the top six, top seven, because he's a fantastic manager and he's revolutionised this football club. He doesn't get the credit that he deserves, in my opinion, for getting this club into the Champions League in his first full season. And they're in Europe now for three seasons in a row. These things weren't happening until he came through the door. So as long as he's here, he's such an improver of players and such a good coach that I think we'll be okay. But is Unai Emery okay with just being okay? This is a manager that wants to operate at the highest level. He wants to be managing in the Champions League because he believes he's good enough to manage in the Champions League. And Villa are almost being punished for getting to that promised land, getting themselves in that position, because they can't spend now to compete. So I don't think it's too dramatic to say that it's a concern that's in the back of my mind, that at some point, whether it be in 12 months or 24 months, would he get frustrated if a club came in for him that could spend and gave him the same kind of things that he gets at Villa in terms of the autonomy and the control? He must think about it, because he's hamstrung at the club he's at the moment, and the club is built around Unai Emery, and the day he leaves is going to be a disastrous day for the football club. I don't think we are there at the moment, but I used to say no one can come in and take Unai Emery from Aston Villa. I do wonder now if, well, maybe they can because of these rules.
His programme notes on Saturday were very telling as well. He said that financial control rules came into football to avoid bankruptcies and payment defaults with a good purpose, but as professionals we should review it, as this good tool will become a limitation for clubs that are doing good management, who'll never be allowed to dream and get higher goals, because the revenue key for these financial rules needs time to come to reality after sporting success. Not being allowed to dream is definitely a problem in the context of what you're talking about there. A manager with ambition not being able to have that ambition is a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, I thought it was quite telling and quite amusing on Saturday that, you know, they're Unai Emery's programme notes. But before the game, the TIFO comes down. We unveil the TIFO that says, there's no limit to our dreams. Well, clearly there's quite a few things limiting our dreams at the moment. So those two things weren't aligned at all. We should be able to build off the success that we've had. But it feels like the opposite. It feels like we have to go within ourselves and sell and do all these things that aren't right in football terms. If you have success, you want to be able to build on it. And without winning a trophy, Villa have definitely had success under Unai Emery. We were a great addition to the Champions League last season, finishing in the top eight to begin with and then getting to the last eight as well, which again, I don't think Unai Emery gets the credit he deserves for those achievements for a club that hadn't been in European Cup for a long, long time. But once you get there, you kind of feel that you should be able to build. Now, Villa, to an extent, are the makers of their own destiny because they completely messed up the last day of the season at Old Trafford, a game they should be going there and beating what was the worst Manchester United I've ever seen. And they didn't. And if they had, they'd be in the top five, they'd be in the Champions League, and things would probably be a little bit better. But we'd still be talking about selling people and these rules, because Champions League or no Champions League, the current PSR and SCR rules are not built to help clubs like Aston Villa who've got ambition. And for me, they need to change.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his seven decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20 years.
Released in three parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning, and to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
It's a good point you make about the final day of the season. Last year, it was Newcastle who ends up nabbing that final spot. Any slight hope to be gained from what Newcastle did end up doing last season? Because Eddie Howe was unbelievably frustrated going into last year's campaign, and it did end up, maybe fortunately so, Aston Villa fans would argue, with them finishing in the top five on the final day of the season, despite all the limitations that they had. So it is possible.
Yeah, look, Villa have still got some very good players and have still got a very good team. I think the year before, Newcastle had massive injury problems and were trying to take part in the Champions League for the first time. So that hurt them. They bounced back. They had a season with no European football at all, which I think was probably helpful for them last time round. They won a cup. They qualified for the Champions League. That's the perfect season. That's a season I'd absolutely love to replicate with Villa. At the moment, I do think much will depend on injuries. We'll be able to rotate because we won't have to play our best 11 in the Europa League Thursday to Sunday. We've got six home games after the Thursday fixtures, I think, in the first eight fixtures. So that's good. That's a positive because Villa haven't lost at home for 12 months in the Premier League. But any form of injury to Ollie Watkins, Youri Tielemans, Morgan Rogers, you're suddenly looking like you're a little bit short. So I'd probably be able to answer that question a little bit better at the end of the window, hoping that we've managed to get a couple of clever loans in like we did in January.
Just one last thing on the Newcastle game on Saturday. Just a curiosity, what is the relationship between Villa and Newcastle fans ordinarily prior to Saturday? Because they do strike me as two clubs on a very similar trajectory. They want the same things. They were separated by goal difference at the end of last season. And that familiarity can often breed a bit of contempt, even though you're both coming from very different parts of the country.
I think there's been quite a comical rivalry over the last 10 to 15 years. Newcastle have been relegated to the Championship twice at Villa Park, and I don't think they were particularly happy with some of the banners that the Villa fans came up with on those 2 days. I think they were a little bit offended by that, which is fine, that's their right to do. So there's almost been this kind of comical hatred and Villa haven't won at St James's Park since the day that Lee Bowyer and Kieran Dyer decided to have a scrap in 2005. So Villa have been awful at St James's Park. So whoever's been playing at home seems to have been able to batter the other one, because we've beat them well a couple of times when they've come to Villa Park under Eddie Howe, when they've had good team and been going really well. So there's been this little bit of competition and little bit of rivalry. But I think both fan bases just can relate to each other now. They're both absolutely sick to the back teeth of feeling restricted, wanting to have success. And Newcastle have had success, as you said, in the last 12 months. What they did last season was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I'd kill for that season this season. But it just feels like it's getting harder and harder for those things to happen. And unless Villa can get kind of a siege mentality this season, off the back of everything that's happened this summer, I do think there'll be times when it's tough if we get injuries. But I think both teams now have got a respect for each other, because they've both achieved things with these restrictions.
Is there a case to be made that there's also a bit of patience required here? Like, I don't disagree with the notion that it is faintly ridiculous that you have to sell your academy products now. I really don't think that's a consequence that football should be happy with. At the same time, Aston Villa, it seems, are a little bit a victim of their own success, where the rise has been remarkable. As you say, themselves and Newcastle both share living memories, recent memories of being in the Championship. So to go from the Championship to the Champions League very quickly is a brilliant inflation of expectation. But that also comes with the revenue streams maybe not matching the amount that you're actually needing to spend year in, year out, as you chase the European dream.
Yeah, and ultimately, I think it's the fans that end up the wrong end of it, and the fans that end up getting hurt, because prices go up every year because the club almost feel like they have to do it. They use PSR as an excuse when they do it, or a reason for things. I'm going to Villa Park on Saturday, and I'm not really seeing anyone new. Obviously, we had a new backup goalkeeper who performed well and a new signing on the bench. But essentially, I'm watching the same players I was watching under Dean Smith. And don't get me wrong, I love those players. They've been brilliant for Villa. But with these rules comes changes for fans that fans don't need and fans don't want. The club are trying to compete with clubs that are in London, traditional Big Six clubs. And Villa fans don't live in London. They don't get London salaries. So the whole thing just feels like, essentially, it alienates the fans. If you think of some of the sports in your country, it's all about where you come from, who you're playing for, you know, playing for your local team, what that means. For us, the players that are local and want to play for the club can't, because they've got to be sold. And us as fans, we're seeing those players go, and we're having to up prices every year to see less, essentially. So it's a really, really difficult one. But I think at the moment, it is harming the fans, I would say, because I felt flat coming away from Villa Park on Saturday, and I'm as positive as they come as a Villa fan.
It's going to be fascinating to see where that anger is directed to as the season goes on. Maybe it'll be truly consistent and it'll be totally directed towards the Premier League, a little bit directed towards UEFA as the months go by. But is there a chance then that actually the owners of the club and the people running the club start to bear the brunt of this? Like, as you mentioned there, prices for tickets getting ratcheted up. The club says it's because of PSR. Like, I was also thinking, and look, this might be an unreasonable point to make, when it comes to the UEFA squad cost rules, the fact that Aston Villa were one of the worst offenders of that, or well above the 70%, they were up at 90%.
Yeah.
Is there any question from the fans towards the club? How have you managed to overshoot the runway on that front to such a degree?
Look, every club will make expensive mistakes, you know, mistakes that cost millions and millions of pounds. And that's just the way of football, because there's so much money that's involved in football now. And if you do make a mistake, and football clubs make loads, it's costly. The Villa owners have so much credit in the bank that I don't think it'll ever be directed at them, because they've done so much for the football club. And in their mind, they've invested a lot of their own money and they'll be doing what they deem is necessary to be done at this current point. But if Villa did start to fall away and not be challenging for the top six, top seven, fans aren't going to pay those prices. They almost got away with it a little bit last season because it was Champions League and everyone wanted to go. It might never happen again. We haven't seen it for so long. So every fan wanted to be at those games. I do think the Europa League now, once you've experienced Champions League, and the prices are less than the Champions League, but I'd say they're probably a little bit on the high side when you factor in everything else around the club, but the expenses at the moment as well. I do think you'll see less people coming through the ground on a Thursday night, and then that costs money to the club because they're not selling out. So it's kind of like this vicious cycle that's probably hurts everyone that's involved, but it ultimately probably all comes down to the rules the way they are.
Is the Villa Academy full of other cash cows that are going to be traded in over the next couple of years? Is Ramsey one that kind of stands out above all the rest, or can you see this being a recurring theme over the next little while?
Well, Villa aren't the only club that it's happened to. We've spoken about other clubs, and you know, Chelsea, in fairness, have used that market really, really well, of loaning academy players out to the Championship and then selling them on for pure profit, knowing they're probably not going to make it at Chelsea, but they'll be very good Premier League players later down the line. And if they become good enough for Chelsea, we can just buy them back anyway. I think Villa are almost trying to copy that model to a lesser extent, but it's harder for us to do. Probably the only blot on Emery's copybook so far is that no one's really come through the academy and found a place in the squad in the match day 20 on a regular basis. Ramsey was already relatively established when Emery walked through the door, and he's left as a 24-year-old that I think at some point will get capped by England. And he's a very good player and was good for Villa despite having a difficult few years. There's a couple of murmurs about them getting in and around the 20 on a match day, but at the moment it doesn't look like there's anyone that's consistently going to be knocking on the door to playing in the first team. And those that have gone on loan are probably deemed not good enough anyway, and that they're hoping they do well in the EFL, and again that they can shift them for profit. That's the way of football right now.
On Saturday, it was a fixture that a lot of us as neutrals were really excited to watch, because Villa Newcastle games have certainly delivered. May not have always been like even games, but certainly the mind goes back to the 4-0 two seasons ago, which I know was not exactly a great day for Aston Villa, but at least you would expect goals from this fixture. What happened? I mean, is it early season rustiness? Why was it such a poor game?
I think it was two teams that maybe don't know where they're at at the moment. Obviously, there's things going on in the background, which there is for both clubs at the moment, that are pretty high profile. I do think that transmits into the players on the pitch and transmits into the dressing room. So I think both teams didn't really want to lose. Newcastle were the better team. If they'd have won, I don't think I could have sat here and had too many complaints. I think Villa defended well, but looked like they were lacking in attack, which, you know, can be explained, because I said there's four players not there that were there last season. Villa couldn't really do what they did in the second half of last season in terms of going forward. And Newcastle, who had one of the best number nines in the Premier League last season, probably one of the best number nines in the world, if not the best in the world, didn't have a number nine anywhere. So I think it was two teams who were kind of still feeling themselves out, feeling each other out. They probably expect to be in and around each other this season. It was important not to lose that first game for both, given the summers they've had. And once we went down to 10 men, I'd have snapped your hand off for a point. And obviously we got that in the end, but Villa were just lacking serious wits, I would say. Morgan Rogers didn't have his best game in the left number 10 role. McGinn did a good job defensively for Villa in the right number 10 role, but the way Villa play, the right back doesn't really come forward. So it just felt a little bit congested, a little bit suffocated, and Villa just had no wits at the end of the day. And Emery obviously didn't think anything coming off the bench once they got a red card was going to aid them or get them the 3 points. So he kind of settled, I think, for that point in the end. But there was definitely, you know, this wasn't the Villa I was watching in the second half of the season. And Newcastle fans would probably say the same about their team as well, despite the fact they had some new players involved. I mean, I've got to say, the Elanga and Barnes both had absolute stinkers, thankfully for us. They both played the game like they had their boots on the wrong feet, the amount of times they overhit the ball into the crowd. So I think if either of them had their shooting boots on, we might have been in a little bit of trouble. But I think it's just two teams who had turbulent summers, quite simpler.
You mentioned earlier on the money that was already spent on Evan Gasson. Is there a chance that Aston Villa have actually just nailed a signing, and when we do eventually see him, he could be a brilliant addition to that attack?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where he plays. He has been referenced in terms of being able to play where Ramsey was playing in that left number 10 position. But I've got to admit, when we signed him, I was looking at him as being maybe Leon Bailey's replacement and playing high and wide on the right. But I don't think that's really his game. He wants to operate in more central areas. So maybe one of these loans that we go on to do will be a player that can play wide on the right-hand side. But we just look a little bit unbalanced at the moment. It's not massively clear where Gasson is going to fit in, although he looks like he's a really good player, did really well in Ligue 1 last season. I should apologise for my French accent that I just did there as well. I just think I'm not sure where he's going to play at the moment, but he's obviously a signing that Emery okayed and a man that Emery wanted. So the chances are he's going to be a good player, or Emery will make him into a good player.
What's a good outcome for Aston Villa in the Premier League this season?
I think Premier League, just being in and around the top seven, top eight, is fine, but that would be dependent on whether we win the Europa League or not. Because that, to me, is Villa's ticket, Villa's dream ticket this season. It gives you, we've got two avenues into the Champions League, whether it be by the league or by winning the Europa League. If we win the Europa League, it kills two huge birds with one stone for the club. We haven't won anything since 1996. We haven't won anything since I was 10. I just thought that was normal, that we win a cup every few years when I was 10, because we won the League Cup in 94 and 96. And then absolutely nothing has happened since. And I can't remember what it feels like to win something. But to win the Europa League would be huge for this club. The manager's won it four times already with various teams that he's been in charge of. So, you know, he's a serial winner in that competition. And you think the way the competition was last season, Spurs and Manchester United ending up in the final despite stinking out the Premier League every week, you'd think we've got a huge chance of being able to do that. But to do that, we definitely need one or two more through the door, because I don't think we'll be able to do it with the squad that we've got at the moment. But that would represent a brilliant season, because you've won a trophy and you're back in the Champions League.
One last one for you. I see that you're recording for YouTube, going along to games with your dad this season.
Yeah.
That's a pretty special thing to be capturing.
Yeah, I've gone with my dad my whole life. I'm 40 in a month's time, and I've been going with my dad since I was seven every week to Villa Park. And I'm aware it's not going to happen forever. So I just thought, I'm going to try and document it in some way. And it seems to have actually gone down pretty well. I wasn't sure what it was going to be or how it was going to turn out. I think he actually enjoyed being on YouTube as well. I was with him yesterday and he was just sat reading the YouTube comments for 15 minutes. I mean, it wasn't really the time to be doing it because he was at a family function, but he was sat there reading all the kind words that everyone had said about him. And I think next game he might be getting people coming up and asking him for photos. But I think it's a special thing, a parent and a child go into the football. As I say, his mobility is not brilliant. He's not going to be able to do this forever. He tried to not go this season, but I managed to persuade him that it was a good idea to keep going, and he's here. So I'm going to record it.
Brilliant, brilliant. Well, best of luck to you and your dad throughout the season, and good luck to your dad navigating the world of being Birmingham wide and famous. I think that's going to be something he'll handle pretty well. Dan Bardella, the 1874 podcast, is who you've been listening to for the last little while. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks, mate. Anytime.
Football on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by William Hill. Download the app and play today. 18 plus gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.